So what I hate about community theater, wow, it's like an intervention, right?
Floodgates are open.
Is it, and this really goes for any type of organization. So let me just, I want to make sure that people understand, is when people pull that I've been here X amount of years card, or I'm a blank member, I'm a lifetime member, so my opinions are
more important
than yours.
Well,
and granted, you got to respect what people have been through. I'm not saying that their words don't matter.
I would say, speaking as a lifetime member of 40 years, I'd have to disagree.
But my point is like, you know what?
My
okay, so you've been around, okay? So, I mean, so you've been in an organization for 40, 50, 60 years. That's great. I mean,
but that doesn't mean that you know everything,
right?
If you're
still pulling that card when you go in the ground, guess what else goes with you? The organization. And if that's what you want, then that's what you're going to get. So unfortunately, we're all going to be gone at some point in our lives. And if we care about the organizations that we belong to and that we profess to love, then we need to allow new ideas, new blood to come in. And use our knowledge from being around 50, 60, 70 years and mentor.
Yes.
Now there's the Ron's rant we've been missing.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
There's no business like show business.
Oh, and away we go.
Hello.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello again. And welcome to the Arts and Business of Community Theater, presented by the Minot Community Players, featuring the Green Room Groupies. Each episode, we discuss issues relevant to the operation of a successful theater, how to produce the highest quality shows for your audience, and sometimes we slip into other topics as well. See last episode. You understand how Green Room conversations sometimes go. I'm David Ward, the de facto leader of our little band. Looking around the Green Room today, I see
Kathleen McBee,
Ron Roberts,
Carol Slifka,
Robert Yeoman,
Brian Burchett Ross.
And I forgot I was going to do something clever and do David Daddy Warbucks.
Oh.
War, but I didn't.
No, you didn't do anything clever. Yeah.
No, in last episode, I think my running gags have run out. I don't think we did any gags last episode, did we?
Well,
we better pick up the basics episode, folks.
Step
up the game.
Nice tricks.
I mean, people want to know about cats. They want to know about Annie.
He did cereal.
They want a baseball reference.
Bob did cereal.
A baseball reference. Bob did do cereal. Tricks, if I remember correctly.
Moist
tricks.
Yeah. So if you want a nice, somber episode, go back. Today's episode, we do not think will be too somber because we're going to try something a little different. As you know, we are often the,
is it going to be a musical?
No, it's not going to be a musical. But, and I'm not even going to talk about going into it yet. I'm going to start with this little conversation icebreaker instead.
Oh.
And then we're going to lead into it.
Everyone loves those.
I think the question I hear most often... the question I hear most often, and maybe something I hate about community theater, hint, hint, what's coming, is how do you memorize all those lines?
Oh, yeah.
So real quick, what's your number one
trick?
I was trying to think. I was saying trick or how do you memorize the lines, Brian?
He doesn't.
You know what? You've been on stage. You've been on stage with almost all of us here. You tell me which one doesn't.
But I'll tell you, because I've been asked this question at least twice in the past, or three times in the past month.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you mentioned you were asked it too.
Oh yeah, I've been asked it several times. What's the biggest repetition?
What's your technique?
Repetition? It's just I highlight those lines, the old fashioned highlight, and then I just start with a piece of paper to block the rest of the page, and I go page by page, and I go over it and over it and over it, and then I go on to the next page, and then I take those two pages and I put them together, and then I go on to the third page, and I just, except for if I have any long speeches or soliloquies or something like rumors when I was, you know, when I did Lenny and I had that two and a half page soliloquy that I separate and I just focus. I get to a place like I'll do my memorizing page, and then at the end of my memorizing time or my time, I'll take another half hour just to go over that, you know, something that's big like that. But that's really it. Once in a while, if my husband is amicable, you know, I'll have him help me. But you know, that all depends.
Okay. So, and I can't believe I'm about to ask this.
Oh, I can't wait.
Bob Yeoman, how do you memorize lines?
By how kind my cast members are. Repetition.
There's a wonderful app called Line Learner, and you read your lines into it, and it plays it back for you, and you can do it by act, by scene, and so on. The bad thing about that is that...
It's the same type of thing, though. Oh, I have one called Off Book.
Yeah. The bad thing about it is it's your voice reading all the lines.
Yes.
So I try to change my voice when I'm reading the other people's lines, which sometimes works. But the other thing I have found, too, is that if I handwrite my lines out separately, that helps cement it into my head, too.
Ron?
Just a constant reread and not by seeing the entire script all the way through. Constantly until performance time. Then I will leave the script backstage, and if I'm fortunate enough to be off stage at a certain time, I will then go to the next scene by scene. But I don't break it down by scene. It's I start on page one or wherever the first line is, and I just go through constantly. I don't say them out loud. I don't record them. It's just constant reading. That's all I do.
From page one to the end.
I don't break it up by scene at all.
Really?
Yeah. Straight through.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. No.
Can't get any straighter than that.
So very first thing, like Brian, the very first thing I would start was any monologues. Those are what I work on first, because then I don't have to learn any cues. And people would always say, oh, those monologues are so hard. How do you do? No, that's easy, because it's just me. And if I screw up, I'll find my place. Exactly. And I, you know, so yeah. I want those monologues so out I don't even way. Have to think about it. Then I'll go through lines, and when I do, I have to say them out loud. I have to hear them. Mm-hmm. I have to practice the enunciation. I want, what word am I going to emphasize in this sentence? I play around with that. Mm-hmm. And then I'll be covering up the other people's lines, or I'll get to the point where I don't even look at the book anymore. I'm just doing it all in my head.
Yep.
And I will hear Brian's voice or Carol's voice or Ron's voice for their line. And, that's how I do it And some of them where it's like a little tricky, like similar lines in different spots. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that I say them right or in the right order. I don't mix them up. I will isolate and then say, okay, say this one and this one, this one and this one, and this one and this one. And I will practice that over and over again so I know what order those similar lines come in.
And I, of course, don't memorize lines. No, I find that if I'm on stage long enough standing there pausing, someone will feed it to me.
Especially when you say, I don't have nothing.
All my characters have these, tend to have my trademark blank look.
Or he just walks off stage.
Yeah.
I saw that a couple of times, too.
But no.
Why is he leaving?
It's the same as everyone else. Repetition.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And again, but so is it safe to say that we all love memorizing lines, or is that something we hate about theater?
I think that's a double-edged sword for me. Mm-hmm. When I first get the script and I look at it, I go, mother of God, how am I going to do this again? Mm-hmm. Knowing that I've done it over and over for 40-some years. And then I get frustrated because, you know, they don't come fast enough, at least for me. I want that instant memorization. I want to be Sheldon at that moment. Mm-hmm. But then at the end, when it's all over, I love that feeling of looking back and going, looking at that book and going, I knew this book from backwards, you know, maybe not backwards and forwards, you know. I think we all drop lines at some point, you know, some of us even scenes. But I do. There's that feeling of accomplishment in the end. Yeah.
Well, to Dave's note, when he said, when people come up to you and say, how did you memorize all that line? That always disappoints me when I get that comment, because I feel like I didn't become the character enough for them, mm-hmm. that they mm-hmm. lost that it was me up there with all those lines, and they still see me doing it. And when I go see my boys in a show, I would, like, the very first night, it would be like total nerves for them, and can they do it, and anxious for them. But then the next couple shows, I could really appreciate them in the character, in the moment, let go of them as a person and see their character. And so when I hear people say, oh, how did you do all those lines? I feel like, oh, you didn't get it. I didn't get it.
So the next time somebody asks you, how did you learn all those lines? Just say, well, I ad-libbed most of it.
That's true.
I was in the moment.
I was in the moment. Yeah. But no, that's interesting. I never thought of it that way. Past few times I've been asked, it has been by other newer actors saying, how do you do this? And just having to assure them it'll come, but you just got to keep repeating it.
And that's the thing. And going to our last show, Becky, we had a new person who had never memorized before. Sharon.
She was fantastic.
Yeah, she was. Thank you, Bob. Yes, she was fantastic. Does she listen to this podcast?
I don't know.
Well, if you do, hi, Sharon. If you don't, turn it on.
Yeah.
Because that's how that works.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not how any of this works.
That's not how this works.
But, you know, Ron and I casted her. No. Weren't you assistant director? Usually every show you're in, I'm assistant director. You were the assistant director. That's right.
That's how
Kathleen
memorable
was.
That was.
No. But, you know, she was only, the first show I casted her in was a Reader's Theater. It was Love Letters. Mm-hmm. And I remember her specifically saying, I will never audition for a show unless it's Reader's Theater because I can't memorize. And then she had heard that I am... was going to eventually down the road here direct Steel Magnolias. For all those in town, that's May 16th, 17th, and 18th.
17th, 18th, and 19th. Tickets are available right now. MonroeCommunityPlayers.org. $15 all seats.
Thank you. So she had heard that, and and she said, well, maybe I'll audition for that. And then suddenly she shows up for Becky to audition. And I thought, well, either you have more confidence in yourself than you believe, or maybe things are not going to look, are going to turn out well. But as Bob said, she was amazing, and she was the first one to know all those lines. Yep. I think part of that also maybe is when you're first starting out acting, you have a bigger fear of not knowing those lines, mm-hmm. and you don't have the skills to in your head to know if this line drops or that line drops, I can pick it up somewhere else, or I can move on.
Story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Know the story. Yeah.
What comes next?
Exactly.
What comes next? Well, then she says this, and I say this. Then mm-hmm. continue it going. Don't leave it dead air.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. And that's what, and, but, sh-
that's for how
sure.
to do it, sacrifice the chicken under the full moon.
There's that too. But yeah, Sharon I think blew us all away that she was the first one and she had him.
And like I say, she was amazing. She did a great job. Just amazing.
Anybody remember numbering the lines in their book?
No.
I remember counting lines to see who had
counting
the most.
Lines. Oh, jeez. Who has time for that?
You really did that?
In high school.
We both did. That's the way they tell us who is the top dog and who is not.
Oh, jeez.
So your theater group really wasn't considered an ensemble. It was more of a who's on top?
I'd say that was in high school.
Okay.
I wouldn't use that word.
My memory of high school was everybody. It was a competition throughout. So.
Oh. Yeah, definitely. Oh.
That's weird.
When it comes to lines, for me, the worst part is when you're on stage, but you only have a couple of lines in between other people's lots of big lines. Because when we did, I think it was Twilight of the Golds, there was a line. I had one line in this one big scene, and I missed it every time.
And I remember every time looking at you, and you just had that lovely look on your face with that beautiful wig of just, you just looking at me. I'm like,
say the line. I know. Well, that was in between my wig slipping off, too.
That, but that, and that is, in my opinion, that's even tougher when you're in a scene, no matter if it's a major character or minor character, sometimes you're in a scene where, you know, you can go four pages before you have a line, right. And the line might just be yes or no.
Yeah.
And all the, but and I think part of that's because you get into the moment and you're listening to all the other actors and you're like, wow, this is really, you know, we're there. And then all of a sudden your line's on you and you're like, oh, yeah, I'm in this scene too, aren't I?
That's exactly it. I had that in Arsenic and Old Lace. There were two pages, and this two-page dialogue, I had one why. Yeah. Just that was the only word, why. Yeah.
Well, the worst part is when you have only one line in a play, you have to dress up as a policeman, and you have one line, and every time you came on stage, every night, somebody stepped on it.
Oh,
yes.
No. Bob.
Oh.
After 30 years, it can now be told.
This is in
it's a good thing you didn't hold on to that.
Speaking of murder. I'll check the back, Chief.
That was your line.
I'd come online.
I stomped all
I'd come on. I'd come on stage, and he'd say, go check the back.
Oh, that just is like, a yeoman. That's a yeoman. I love
me,
it.
Me. I had to get dressed up as a police officer. I was recovering from illness.
That was both of us. Like, do you want the brown or do you want the blue?
Yeah, but it was hilarious, but it wasn't. Oh. It wasn't in the moment. just to let you know.
I
carpooled in today, so it'll be a long ride back home.
I do have to agree, though. That would be something I would hate about theater. Yes. Somebody's
and that's our real topic for today.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brian, for
good
pulling
job,
us back
Brian.
Where we wanted to. Nobody likes memorizing lines. Nobody likes late night rehearsals. Nobody likes certain things. But I thought we'd go a little different today, and say, okay, we're always big cheerleaders for community theater. We talk about the love of theater. We talk about all the wonderful things community theater does in community. But let's face it, I think there are things we all hate about community theater. So we thought we'd try to assemble our list of 10 things we hate about theater today.
Is hate the word, or is it maybe
hate
things,
is the word.
Things that
there
we'd like
we
to
go.
Change.
There's Mary Sunshine. Oh, I was waiting for her. I was waiting for her.
So to me, I hate when other people step on your line.
Yes.
You could say you hate when other people blank on their lines.
I've got nothing.
Yeah. So we open it up. What do we got?
Okay, so for me, I'm sorry.
Fair warning to the audience, we probably I just stepped on you. Fair warning to the audience, we'll probably go beyond 10.
Yeah. And this is speaking from the director's chair. I hate it when somebody who isn't even involved in the play decides that they're going to change the set.
Oh, boy.
Look,
I hate that,
we all
too.
Know exactly what we're talking about.
Well, yes. Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. You know, and I part of me has to say, I'm right there with Kathleen, Miss Rose colored glasses woman over here, with the word hate. I don't like that word. I rarely use it. Yeah. But I hate that.
Yeah.
I hate that. When they come in and say, you know what? I don't know anything about this show, but I know this set would look better this way.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to strangle them.
Yeah.
I know a plant belongs here in this pathway that most of the actors use.
That's a copy of it. We took care of the original.
Yes.
I was there for one blow up of it, and I was just right on the edge of the argument when it hit the complain about the plant happened right then, moving it, and then the director quite rightly put it back where it was and said, please don't move this, it's blocking. Well, I think I should know better. I have been with players for such and such years and such and such. It was just she tripped. The individual tried to loop other people to agree with her, that person, and it didn't work very well.
I hate, let me make sure, see how I can work this out. I hate when people in the show don't respect or understand how everyone gets to where they need to get, as far as their levels, as far as their character and things of that nature. For example, now here it comes, folks, here comes the baseball reference. I like to treat the rehearsal process like spring training, okay? I'm not coming in at 100%. Don't expect me to show up on day one and know everything and be where the character's going to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to ramp. I'm going to ramp it up slowly. Mm-hmm. So by the time the lights hit and it's opening night, I will be 100%. And people need to understand that. Just like I need to understand that people will come in at 100%, but then by the time the 8 to 12 weeks or 15 weeks, if you're doing a musical, if you know, you know, you're completely burned out. Mm-hmm. And then they've got nothing left. So in my, people need to be more understanding of people's ability, methods of how they get to ready to be in a show. And I hate that they don't.
Mm-hmm. Especially when they're going through their own individual process too.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
That we don't all do it the same way.
Exactly. But you need to understand that.
Yeah. Okay, good, good. Now we're getting somewhere. Oh, Brian.
I love it all.
Oh,
oh boy!
I don't
need another bucket.
I don't know. Carol's was like so on the money for me. I'm still stewing over that one. What do I hate? Ron, spill the hate out.
Turn into a Ron episode. Nobody likes those.
Yeah, we love Ron episodes. Yeah. And we love to joke about Ron episodes. So if you don't give us the Ron episodes, we can't tease you about it.
That's something we hate. We don't get enough Ron episodes.
We don't get it. Yeah, I hate not getting enough Ron episodes.
I hate when people just placate me.
I'm still emotionally destroyed.
What do I hate about the theater? I guess if my biggest pet peeve, my biggest hate is a theater organization anywhere that can consist of people that have a narrow view of what theater should be from the start. That bothers me probably more than anything. And I think that has irritated me since when did I walk into Players? 1984?
Scarred in 1974, so yeah.
Yeah, 84. The concept of that's not what we do. And we're not going out of a comfort zone because we're here for just a particular audience.
That's not how they did it in the movie.
Well, yeah, and that too. But yeah, that the narrow-mindedness that you can find in theater bothers me because, in my opinion, theater, that this particular art form is to broaden people's minds. Yeah. It's an art form to broaden people. And so that just makes me madder than anything else.
So somebody's saying our audience won't go for that. No.
Absolutely.
That's it. Absolutely. When you have a very narrow view that you know your audience so well and that's all that you're going to ever speak to.
Because not only does it, to me, does it show a narrow-mindedness, but it also shows an arrogance. Mm-hmm. An arrogance that I know what these people out there want. Mm-hmm. You don't, because you don't know everybody out there.
And they're staying away in droves.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I have fought for swearing. I have fought for, anything that I've considered at one time taboo. I'm still shooting for a show.
Family friendly, Brian? Is that the word you're looking for?
Adult. Yeah. Adult. And I'm still somewhere out there is going to be a show that I'm going to put on that has at least partial nudity in it. But as long as it fits into the show. I don't want to do a show that just does it to say, ooh. But you know what? Because I think civilization has matured as well as devolved. But so as long as the audience knows going into it, this is an adult show. This is what you might see. Then you're okay. And there is something for everybody. So that whole narrow-minded sort of this is, that just drives me nuts. I hate that. Thank you.
Okay, well, I can give you a hate now that I've listened to all yours.
My ears are burning.
Yeah, I know. Get ready. Here it comes. I hate when we're discussing doing a show and the comment comes out, we'll make money with this. That's probably what I have to go to that level to find a hate. It just turns my stomach immediately that we've lost our perspective there on what we're doing and why we're doing it when it's just the dollar sign comes first.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you know,
well, that's certainly not true in our group.
No. Okay, I'm going to go a little less altruistic here and say the thing that I really hate is time wasting. Yes. If rehearsal starts at 6:30, start rehearsal at 6:30.
You like me as a director.
Good Lord. I just that annoys me more than anything. Or people will stop in the middle of the scene and start BSing about this, that, or the other thing. No, get back on track. I got things to do, places to go, people to see. Let's use our time wisely.
And
rant over.
And yet you still want to audition for Steel Magnolias? You know how I direct. I'm all over the place.
Oh, that's
but you
that's
don't
different.
Waste time.
Yeah.
Well,
there's a time.
Yes, I do. There are times when I do waste time.
Well, and then those are the times when I say, so let's get going.
Yes, you have. Yes. But I do feel that there's a time that you should have a little bit of fun while you're rehearsing.
We're right. Oh, I'm not
sitting there for
fun.
Half an hour and saying, hey, did you watch the latest?
Mm. Yeah.
You know, well, did you see the latest this or that?
And having a separate production from rehearsal. Means,
right.
Yeah. Those discussions, when you have your actors there, focus on your actors.
Right.
And talk your production business without tying them up.
Right.
Unless they're involved.
Yeah. Right, and that's happened to me too. It's like some kind of issue that doesn't involve the people in the show comes up, and all of a sudden there's a big 20-minute discussion about it. Or one person is having an issue with their costume, so the director takes 20 minutes to resolve that issue. Can you wait till the rest of us leave? I mean,
just joking. Keep right.
Okay, so yeah. He's flailing his arms.
We're going back. We're just joking.
Okay. No. Anyway, that's my thing. Time wasting.
Good. Go ahead, Ron, because I got another one.
So what I hate about community theater, wow, it's like an intervention right
there. Floodgates are open.
Is, and this really goes for any type of organization. So let me just, I want to make sure that people understand, is when people pull that I've been here X amount of years card. Or I'm a blank member. I'm a lifetime member. So my opinions are more important than yours.
Well,
now, granted, you got to respect what people have been through. I'm not, and I'm not saying that their words don't matter.
I would say, speaking as a lifetime member of 40 years, I'd have to disagree.
But my point is, it's like, you know what? Okay, so you've been around, okay? So, I mean, so you've been in an organization for 40, 50, 60 years. That's great. I mean,
but that doesn't mean that you know everything.
Right.
If you're living 40 years later.
If you're still pulling that card, when you go in the ground, guess what else goes with you? The organization. And if that's what you want, then that's what you're going to get. So, unfortunately, we're all going to be gone at some point in our lives. And if we care about the organizations that we belong to and that we profess to love, then we need to allow new ideas, new blood to come in. And use our knowledge from being around 50, 60, 70 years and mentor.
Yes.
Now, there's Ron's rant we've been missing.
Yes.
Don't put it in this magic binder that's somewhere that has everything in it.
Oh, the...
No, it's not that. I'm pulling back from my retail days because I had a store manager who said, oh, it's in the binder. Well, where is it? Well, he never told us where it was. but I know what you're referencing.
It's in the production manual.
Well, it is.
That's our version.
I didn't want to say
that. That's our version of it. In the production manual, and everybody looks right.
Where is it? Somewhere
in the air. Everybody looks in the air as soon as you hear that. It's in production
manual.
Anyway, it's in the cloud. Yeah.
Do you have another one?
Yeah, but you haven't said anything.
I'm enjoying this too much.
I know.
Other people are cast as Daddy Warbucks.
There we go.
You hate having to wear a ball cap?
Well, in a sense, I mean, and this is something the young actor hated. I hated when other people got cast for parts that I knew I should have. Mm. But. As we mature as an actor, we understand that, you know, that's just the way the game is played.
Yeah.
Life moves on. The only loss is to the audience.
Yeah.
I'll take anything I can get.
You can sit backstage just going, X. Excellent.
I knew, but you know, nobody wanted me to do it.
I was right here all the time. All you had to do is ask.
But no, but yeah. So no, I'm enjoying that.
I know you are. You've got.
I didn't know where we would go here, but yeah, this was just wonderful.
You've got a sort of.
And we are only up to six.
You've got a sort of Emperor Palpatine look on your face. Yes, let the hate flow through you.
I was thinking more like Bob, Mr. Burns.
Mr. Burns. Excellent. Yeah. Okay, I'll tell you another one that just grinds my gears, and that is.
Oh, Family Guy reference.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to get in there when you can. Yes, not a Ron episode, so we got to go with something else. Oh, thank you. And this is in a director's, when I'm in the director's chair, it drives me nuts when somebody asks me a question and suddenly I've got actors answering it for me.
Yes.
Before I can even think about the question. Because I'm not just going to start spouting. Well, sometimes I will. I'm good at spouting. But I usually try to sit and think of an answer that's the right answer. And I've got actors going, oh, we're going to do it this and we're going to do that. And I'm like, back off, people. This, you know. Oh, God, I wish I had a whip sometimes.
I'm glad you didn't.
Here's another thing that I dislike strongly is when actors don't understand how they fit into a production. Okay? Not everybody's the main eventer. Okay? Not everybody's going to go on last. Mm-hmm. Okay? You have to understand where you fit and you have a role to play. I know now, and this was the hardest pill for me to swallow, is that I am not a needle mover. I am not something that people buy tickets to come see personally, which is fine. Don't give me that look. I've accepted it, and I know where I fit into productions. And with time, you learn that. Don't try to make yourself something you're not. Okay? If you are not cut out to be the main guy, you're not going to be. As the kids say, you're not the main character. You're not. Stop trying to make yourself the main story. Fit in where you fit in, and guess what? Life gets a lot more fun on stage once you realize where you belong and you don't try to do what you can't, because you can sabotage other people. You could become a very unliked person in a group. You can be a very unliked person in the cast. You have to know what your strengths are and don't try to do something that you can't. And I hate when actors do.
Okay, now I got one.
It's like watching ping pong.
this is probably isn't a hate, but this is more of a
annoyance,
disappointment. There are sometimes I get so discouraged and disappointed in some people going on the opposite side of what you said that don't realize how important they are to the entire group, let alone productions. And they never understand how important they are. That bothers me because I want to sometimes just grab them and say, you're just as important as anybody else in the organization in this. And they, you know, because we have those people that are probably over on the other side going, look at me. I've been here 85 years.
Do you think that those people kind of, you don't like that because they lack the extra passion or confidence?
No, what bothers me is because they don't see what the rest of us see in them. And I wish they had, and it's honestly nobody in this room, but there are a couple of them that I've met. Actually, one for sure in Ann Arbor that I remember that just... I think it was a deterrent to her acting and to just the organization, because she had great ideas, but she would never, well, no one really likes what I'm going to say, so I'm not going to say it. I really da da da. And that drives me nuts. Do I hate it? No, that's not really a hate, but it is something that's like, you know what? There's, when you're in an organization like community theater, thoughts and ideas are what makes and builds a group. And you've got to be able to let it out.
Well, and you have to be able to throw that idea out and then know sometimes it's not going to be liked.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And just grow.
And that's not a personal attack.
No. Mm-mm.
If someone shoots down your idea and doesn't like it, it doesn't mean they don't like you as a person. And I hate it when people assume that you say that, no, this won't work. Oh, well, so-and-such doesn't like me. Mm-hmm. That's what this is.
Yes.
And that's not what it is.
Because then all of a sudden my thought, my mind at that point is, you haven't gotten past junior high cafeteria.
I was going to say.
You haven't gotten past that. You need to grow up just a little bit more. At least try to make it into high school before you're 90. What else, Dave? Yeah.
give us a recap, Dave.
Well, actually, we're only up to eight.
Carol's got
another one. I hate it when other actors on stage don't remember their blocking, and it messes up what you need to do. You know, like
nobody in this room.
Nobody in this room.
I'm going to leave now. But,
somebody is supposed to walk over to the table and say something, and then I have to go over to the table and pick something up and respond to them. But they don't go over the table, so I have to yell across the room. Or I just made that up. But the blocking is there for a reason. The director wants you in a certain place for a reason. Just be there. Mm-hmm. The end.
Yeah. So I have a question, and it's not, it may be something that I hate. I'm not sure yet, but I'm just curious as to how everybody else feels about this.
Let's see if Ron hates this.
How do you take comments from the audience members? And not like, oh, great job, I really liked that. More along the lines of, I had no idea that you could do that. Or B, that was the best I've ever seen you do, even though I left at intermission.
Yeah.
So to me, this whole concept of I had no idea you could do that is almost a backhanded slap. Mm-hmm. To me, I don't know. I'm not saying I hate it or, you know, but I don't know how to take, how do you handle those type of comments?
That kind of comment would be fine. The comment that always makes me kind of, that kind of takes me aback is when people say, well, you were really just playing yourself.
Oh, I hate that one.
I hate that one. Well, thanks for not.
Or the one that's, when they say, I saw, especially if you're playing a really horrible kid, I saw so much of you in that.
And it's like, you embodied that axe murderer. So
I know.
It was like,
you showed the consequence.
Yeah. I've never seen anyone more believable as a rapist. I know I'm going right out. But that throws me off because it's like, oh, how? But to yours, you know, and it takes me, now your comment takes me to way, way back to Bent, which I think I mentioned once or twice.
Episodes
16, 18, 22, 24, 30. Yeah, oh, okay.
Let me check the database.
Dave just found a new hate anytime Brian mentions Bent. But no, you know, I did this role. I did a type of role I'd never done up until that date. And I remember a player who came up and saw the show, came up to me bawling, Lisa, and said, I never knew you could do something like that. And I took it as a compliment. Because I've achieved, I proved something.
Well, I think when they say, I didn't know you could do something like that, that they didn't see you up there. They saw the character.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And what you were able to make them feel and believe and see. Mm-hmm. Whereas if they say, oh, you weren't really acting, you were just playing yourself.
I know.
Leaving Iowa, that was what my mother said to me.
Oh. Did she listen to this?
No.
Oh.
Mothers.
Yeah.
Mothers. That's kind of. You know, he's just put a little note. And by the way, look up podcast and say this.
Yeah, I guess the only time I ever really got that comment about you were just playing yourself was, you know,
Daddy Warbucks.
Daddy Warbucks.
Yeah. Yes, of course. Saw that coming.
You sing like that all the time.
I thought somebody said that to you about Jonathan Brewster, too.
Now, remember, that's from Arsenic and Old Lace, Carol.
I was going to say that.
Because you've never seen it.
I've never seen it
or read it.
Big shocker. Yeah,
he's a murderer.
Missed that.
Okay.
No, I just think that it's interesting comments because, you know, yeah, we love and hate what the audience will tell us. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and but on the other hand, and I get upset when the audience doesn't tell me the right things, mm-hmm. you know, especially 5-6 years later. but
or
it's
30
or 30.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that wasn't the audience. That was a cast member.
That's true.
That was psychologically damaging.
It was. But not the way you think. But it just
because it's true.
But yeah, I think we gotta love it. I kind of hate audiences.
Whoa.
Okay.
And well, that's but again, in that sense, you never know what you're doing, how it's going to affect them until you actually do it.
Yeah.
And I think in that sense, that's why we get nervous, because are they going to like me? Are they not going to like me? How are they going to react to what we're doing on stage? And in that sense, I kind of hate that. Maybe it's the anticipation of how the audience is going to react. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we go through the whole process. You got the director who you trust. You got a few other people who may have seen it. But the reality is, until the audience sees it, you just don't know.
No,
if
you don't.
It really is good or not. And that's kind of part of the wonder of theater. But it's like, yeah, the audience. Sometimes, and especially when the audience, let's face it, some audiences don't know how to react.
Yeah, that's true.
I swear during one of the most intense scenes of, I believe it was during Of Mice and Men, it sounded like Bigfoot was running through the audience. I don't know who was going up and down the aisle, but it was like, clomp, 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 clomp. And it's like, I'm trying to act here. Sit in your freaking seat and stop it. Or the time someone's foot was on the stage. It's like, no, fourth wall is here. You are on the other side of it. You know, you just
show business text.
You just never know. But like I say, until you know, are they going to laugh? Are they going to not? I swear, when we did 10 Little Indians, I forgot there was any humor in that play.
No, Blazing Saddles.
Oh,
you know, it's a murder mystery, but there's a lot of humor in that.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So that's it. I just don't.
On that note, I saw Lion in Winter, and I remember a couple people that left at intermission, and they said, because...
That's too bad.
Because they said, you know, this is supposed to be a comedy, and I was like, it is? Really?
It's hilarious.
It didn't come across as a comedy, and I had never seen it, and I didn't know anything about it.
Wait, whose version?
I'm not going to say.
Okay.
But it wasn't ours.
Oh, it wasn't
that's
ours.
The only thing we were curious about. That's
the same.
I saw Dave's...
What?
It should have been.
Remember that?
You were in it.
I know.
You had some of the jokes,
but I don't remember any audience reaction.
That's a big regret.
I mean, it's not a
farce or
roll on the floor laughing.
Right. Yeah,
you know, the whole bit between Eleanor and Richard is.
Oh, the dialogue is amazing.
Or Henry, I should say, yeah. Eleanor and Henry.
Maybe I just misremember.
But playing devil's advocate here, if the audience doesn't get the joke. Is that really the audience's fault?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's because we don't really know what the... So it's not really the audience. I hate that we don't know their reaction until it happens.
So you hate the uncertainty.
Yes. Yeah.
I see. Okay.
So that's probably... The audience... Like I say, the audience can be irritating sometimes when it's like, you know, I'm trying to do drama up here, folks.
Yeah.
Sit down and stop crinkling your candy.
Exactly.
Which is why I'm still against. I hate concessionaires who insist that we sell popcorn and hard candies that come in wrappers.
Yeah.
Because during the Tempest, we did that, and I'm coming out with my first big soliloquy as Prospero.
Prospero.
That's how we decided. Yeah. And that's all I'm hearing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, okay, I know you don't understand Shakespeare, but stop it.
Somebody might.
Or when patient zero is in front row
coughing
and refuses to go out and get a drink of water.
Yeah.
Well, now there's a funny story about that. Well, it's not funny, I shouldn't say. We did.
Because they died.
We did One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. In case you didn't know, I think I may have mentioned that show a couple of times.
Episode 12. Yeah,
thank you. And there was one part, one of the
the shows, there was a gentleman or a woman, someone in the audience, with an oxygen tank. I don't know if you remember this.
Oh, dear.
I do. I do.
And so throughout the entire show, there was the beep.
Oh, yeah.
Beep.
Oh, no.
But we were in a hospital.
Beep.
I was going to say,
we were in a mental institution, so it worked. But it was just one of those things. And then, you know, they, I don't know if like, well, I'm sure they had the rights. They recorded it. And, you know, we got a copy of it. So I went home and I'm like, oh, I wonder which night they recorded. Guess which one it was. Beep.
Okay, so no more bringing my CPAP. That brings up one of my hates, though, when you talk about recording shows. I hate watching myself.
I do, too. Oh, yeah.
When people have perhaps somehow recorded a show, and then we're all invited to watch it, perhaps in a party, and it's like, oh, no, I just can't watch myself.
I don't.
Maybe that's ego. Now, sometimes I'm actually impressed with what I did on stage, but you can't say that because, you know, well, I could have done that better.
Just being generous more.
But we all are our own worst critics.
Yeah.
We truly are.
It's mostly like, am I really that fat? Yeah. And of course the answer is yes. It's like,
is my posture really that bad?
My nose hasn't always been that big, has it?
The count could have been a little bit longer.
Oh my God, I walk like my mother.
Oh my God.
Oh, that's, yeah, that is a scary part when you get older.
Yes. Oh, like, no.
I've heard myself laugh a couple times and went, when did I start laughing like my father? That's horrible.
When did you stop using age makeup?
I remember
20 years ago.
Back in the day when it was like, wrinkle your forehead. It's like, I can't. Trying to do it. Now that was my early 20, and now it's like, let's see if we can smooth these out a little.
Give me a little trowel.
Oh, no, we don't have to put any age lines on you. In fact, let's try a little bit of pancake.
Let's try a little highlight on you.
Let me get my trowel.
Think of that.
Welcome to Elizabeth
Hall. Kabuki Theater.
Well, that's a whole different.
And talk about backwards compliments. When I work at Greenfield Village in October and I'm a witch, they put heavy makeup on you. Mm-hmm. And people always say, oh, you look beautiful. You don't look anything like yourself.
Oh, gosh. That's terrible.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah.
It's a beautiful shoot.
But that brings up a question that somebody else had mentioned, and I think it's a good question. It kind of tangents off the hate a little bit, but how do you respond to compliments? How do you take compliments?
Not well.
I mean, wasn't that the question?
And that was really, and it's not the good jobs and the, you know, I really like what you did. I mean, obviously, you know what to say, but things like, you know, I never thought you could do that, or wow, that's not what I expected, or it's a shame they didn't get the cast they wanted.
Well, then let me ask you this. We're going to go into therapy, Ron. I went into therapy with Dave the last show, so I'm going to go into therapy with you. We just did Becky's new car, and I think I gave you a compliment just like that, because your Joe was, to me, one of the most, you immersed yourself to a point physically and through character that I lost you. I totally lost you.
Yep.
But you're the director.
So it doesn't matter.
Well, no, it does. It does, though, because it's different when you say it, where it's just somebody who, you know, is sitting four rows back. Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah. Oh,
That's what I mean.
I see
what you're
saying.
When it comes from a peer, I understand that. But when it's somebody who has just come to see the show, I had no idea you could do that. Oh, oh, oh. They may not sound like that. They really
may
don't.
Or may not sound like that.
Apparently Ron hates our audience, too.
I'm just full of surprises.
There you go.
Yeah. What's that?
I'm just full of surprises.
Oh, yeah. Damn.
Oh, there you go.
I really am not comfortable with compliments that much.
I think that's our Midwest upbringing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's the same in the East or the West or everything, whatever. I'm sure it's Midwest things like, oh, no, not, you know, it's that false modesty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When the reality is, yippee, they liked it. And your response is, well, you know, we do our best. We try.
It's a love hate. It's a love hate. Because
a donation in the hats as you leave.
Because you want those kind of responses. You want people to say, you know, like Lisa did when I did Bent several years ago.
Wait, you did Bent?
Yeah,
you did
that's Bent? Well, oh, yeah. Wow. I don't want to talk about it, okay, guys? But
oh, Peyronie's disease.
What's normal for you may not be normal for anyone else.
Oh my gosh.
I have a carrot.
But I mean, you know, I loved it, but at the, you know, you love comments like that, but at the same time, curse you all. You want to, I just figured out something else I hate. But at the same time, it's to me, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, and even back to the compliment thing, it is even kind of awkward sometimes when fellow actors that are in the audience, not necessarily on stage with you, mm-hmm. but they give you compliments. Like, I'll shout out Corey, one of our listeners.
Hey, Corey, hey, haven't Corey. Seen a long time.
You know, she came to see Becky's.
Sorry, Becky.
She came to see Becky's, and, you know, she gave me a lovely compliment and, you know, and made some comments, and I didn't, it was just like, I felt like kind of awkward. I'm like, I didn't know how to, I thanked yes. her and I appreciated it, but it was just one of those things like, wow, was it really? You know, 'cause you just start to doubt, because I've seen what she's done and I think she's phenomenal.
I agree.
And for example, and I know I say that we talk about it, but Bill McCluskey, mm-hmm. you know, when he comes up to you and he'll give you, I hope, his honest feedback. He's probably sitting in his chair right now.
Fooled him again. I'm an actor.
But, you know, he'll give you his opinion of what you've done. And to me, that I seek that out. I would like to hear from certain people. But mm-hmm. even when he tells me, well, you know, critiques or whatever, it's very difficult sometimes to take. Not that they're bad. But if it's a compliment, it's like, really? Because I think I could do so much more. You know, and you're never, like Brian said,
you're never
really happy with everything that you do. You always think that there's something
you could have done better.
Right.
But that's impressive that he does give you that critique. Because anytime I'm in a show and I go up to him, he just puts his head down and waves me away.
Oh, no.
Well, don't ask Brian.
No, I have seen it.
It's horrible. And that's when I go in my dressing room and cry.
It kind of
is. You have a dressing room? You have a dressing room?
Wait a minute.
It's the bathroom.
So kind of on a tangent, though, and maybe not a tangent, but I'll use Bob's piggybacking on that, because Bob's favorite phrase, he noticed that we say at least 5 times each episode.
Piggybacking
yeah. on that. But so when I get a compliment or something, part of me is reacting with the modesty, because I'm always amazed. Because in my head, it's like, I was just doing what I do.
Right.
But, you know, so for someone to come out and say, for example, Twilight of the Golds, you were savage. Mm-hmm. Was I?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
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 You know, but that's the thing. Or even Becky's new car. I just love it. It's like, you know, to me, it's like, I'm just doing what I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But people, you know, people like it. So I think it's hard to us to understand that maybe we are good at what we do. And like I say, it's really more of a, you're trying to convince yourself more so than what they're saying. Now, when people just kind of see you and turn the other way before they have to greet you,
that's not
it's
good.
Like, well, I suppose
that's me and Bill. Yeah, I know.
Well, the thing we have to remember, too, is that there are a lot of people out there who could not ever imagine themselves getting up on a stage in front of people and singing lines and whatever.
That's one of the biggest fears people have.
Yeah, public speaking or performing, So what we take as just, well, that's just what I do, they see as something that is just amazing. Yeah.
Well, and that's something I'd heard once. I know Kathleen doesn't like to discuss money, but I heard once at a conference was never underestimate the power of being yourself.
Oh.
And there's actually that you can monetize that. So anytime that everyone is, there is a certain amount of amazement, like you said, mm-hmm. That you got up there and do that. People will pay for experiences just to be with the audience. I don't know if I mentioned it on the podcast or not, but Kathleen's family was kind enough to throw us an afterglow party after Becky's new car. And I happened to overhear a comment, I believe from your son, well, it involved your son and nephew, I believe. So if they listen, shout out to them. But the comment was, I feel like I'm in Hollywood.
Oh.
To which your son said, well, I'm just around these guys all the time. So I, but anyway, but you know, and I overheard that and it's like, huh, you know, there was a power of us just being there mm-hmm. because they can't imagine doing that themselves. And again, so if we had, for example, a VIP event, meet the actors afterwards, have a glass of wine or whatever.
We didn't have to be out by 10 o'clock. We could.
Well, yeah. I mean, but those are the kind of things, yeah. you know, people get, you know, you pay for an extra ticket, you come up on stage and see the set, things like that. Now, those are things that, again, venue dependent and everything, but never underestimate the fact that what we do is something, as you just pointed out, Carol, that most people can't imagine themselves doing.
Yeah. Now, I will just piggyback on that, say the famous phrase. And I know I've told this story before, but when I was in high school, we did Grease. At the one of the performances in the front row was a gentleman, he's deceased now, unfortunately, Nick Rafko, went to SMCC, got a scholarship to Wisconsin, played in the Rose Bowl. He had the big Letterman jacket on, everything, right? And he's sitting in the front row, and I happened to see him during the show and watched his reactions. And afterwards, I came out, and he came up to me. And he's like, I don't know how you do that. That's awesome. And here's this guy who had played in the Rose Bowl, you know, had possible NFL aspirations. I mean, he was a phenomenal football player. Yeah. And he stops me, this punk kid. It's like, oh, I don't know how you do it. So I think it is true that you don't realize in the moment or even doing it that people can't fathom being up there. To me, it's.
And then what they don't understand is the rush. From all of us, there is that rush of opening night, of when those lights come on and boom, you're out the door as a new character or as a character. You're riding a wave to the very end, and that's a rush that I think the audience sees us. They see us riding the wave, but they can't understand the thrill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you have a comment, Bob?
Oh, he's keeping track of
piggybacks. He's keeping track
of piggybacks. He's counting them out.
So piggyback on that, I want to get my piggyback in here. I think we've gone full circle from hate to why
we love
it.
We did.
There we go.
Yeah, we did.
It's almost like that was his plan.
Oh.
Yeah.
How do you do that, Dave?
I'm a genius.
That reminds me. You know what else I hate? No, just kidding.
But no, it's yeah, I think that's the lesson. It's like, we hate it, but by golly, we love it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, as we've pointed out every episode since episode 14, we love it.
We do. We love it.
We love it a lot. So, speaking of loving it.
Oh, can't wait to see where this segue is going.
Yeah.
I hear we have a dissenting opinion about Wicked.
Oh.
Which was just recently. So we don't have a review, but some of us have seen some shows on stage recently. Wait, I saw Hadestown, which Brian had seen in Broadway. Brian loved Hadestown. I predictably thought it was 20 minutes too long.
Well, I know.
There was one scene at the end. It's like, okay, we know where this is going to end. Let's just get there. But that's my lack of musical appreciation, as Ron might say.
I think that's more for pop music. Yeah, but
maybe
okay.
For pop music. No, I only know pop music. I don't know the good stuff.
Oh, okay.
Apparently. So, but you know, I saw it at Toledo, and just so the differences that we saw between the two productions is at Toledo, they unfortunately could not use an actual pit. I will say the lighting. And this is the worst, one of the things you don't want to say about a show, but the lighting was spectacular. Mm. They did a swirling thing that I thought there was a pit there for a moment.
Oh, nice.
They did this nice swirling thing as they danced around, and it looked like this just absolutely black hole of a place. They did a lot of neat things within the show, even though, like say, if you read the Greek myth, you knew where it was going to end up. So it was an excellent production all in all. Carol, I believe, has seen Wicked now for the third time, just saw it in Detroit. Kathleen saw it for the first time. I know it's an awkward segue, but there we go.
Yeah.
So tell us what you thought, Kathleen.
So I was familiar with the music, was not very familiar with the story. Mm-hmm. So I'd only heard
it's based on the Wizard of Oz.
Yes, I knew that. Dave, thank you so much.
It's actually based on the book
Wicked. You should read the book.
Oh, goodness. I don't have time. I'm memorizing lines. Oh, but anyway. Yeah.
I hated the book.
But
it's a difficult read.
Mm,
he's a bit of a of a Man. Esoteric writer.
Yes, esoteric. That's a play.
Here's the part of the story. We're going to get to a climatic bit, and now we're dropping that entire storyline. Let's do something about it.
If you can figure out the clock, please tell me. Go ahead.
So I went with someone that had seen it a couple times, including on Broadway, like Carol, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. We had great seats, loved the music. The energy on stage was fantastic. How Glinda comes in and how they did what they did. Now, granted, the witch didn't fly out into the audience because we're at the Opera House. That was not a possibility. But I truly enjoyed the show very much, and in the whole venue, that the whole space of it.
You know, when I saw it on Broadway, I don't remember her coming out.
She doesn't go out.
She doesn't fly out.
She should go out.
She raises up.
Yeah, I think Mary Poppins raised that.
Yeah, she
bar.
Did do that.
They did do the big raise.
The
whole big raise.
Yeah. So. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't know if I'd go see it again. I thoroughly enjoyed the production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for me, I thought it was just okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were parts of it that I really liked. But there were parts that I was, because I've seen it before, I was anticipating, like especially in Defying Gravity,
mm-hmm.
when they raise her up and that song just knocks you back in your seat.
And the cape comes out and just... It just covers the whole stage, and
And the actress who played Elphaba, she just didn't have the voice to do that. I mean, she had a very nice voice, but it didn't have that tone that Elphaba really needs, in my mind. Not that I'm a musical expert by any means, and God knows I can't carry a tune in a bucket, but she just didn't have that presence that I think Elphaba needed.
Was the first time you saw it on Broadway?
I don't remember where. I don't remember if it was Broadway or it might have been Chicago.
Okay.
It was one of those two, I'm thinking. And then I saw it at Stranahan a few years ago. So it's been, a few years in between, but it was that, like I say, she just didn't have that presence that she needed. She was... Because when I think of Wicked, I think of Elphaba as the main character.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't have main character energy for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was more that Glinda was the main character, and she was delightful. She was sweet. Parts of it it seemed very affected. Like, instead of naturally being this, kind of ditzy person, especially in popular, all those little, it was like, okay, now I go over here and kick, and then I go over here and I squeal, and it just didn't seem like it was, it felt very affected.
Mm.
So anyway, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the price because it was a lot cheaper than a lot of other shows I've seen. But, we had nosebleed seats, but it was fine. It just didn't wow me like it has in the past.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It does look like we are out of time for this episode. I'd like to thank each and every one of you out there for listening. We appreciate the support that you not only give us, but that you give to keeping theater alive in your communities. We also appreciate feedback and conversation from you, so be sure to visit our Facebook page for more fun and look at the community and just look for the media. I'm done. Look for the Monroe Community Players podcast.
That's all, folks.
Or for the Art and Business Community Theater. Emails may be sent to mcppodcast@monroecommunityplayers.org. And to keep up with the latest shows, activities, and such, I don't know what Brian is doing now, go to monroecommunityplayers.org. We generally do release 2 episodes a month, so please take a moment to subscribe, like, otherwise rate us, help spread the word that we are here. Sometimes we get along, sometimes we don't, but we are here. The Art... Well, I don't know.
Who's Horton?
Who's Horton? The Art and Business. The Art and Business of Community Theater is presented by Monroe Community Players, recorded at the Monroe Public Access Podcast Studio, high atop the Benish Mill in historic Monroe, Michigan. For the love of theater, we are the groupies, and we will see you
in the green room.
Well, it's off color, actually.
Think it hasn't been a little slice of heaven.